Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire. All right, guys, welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff. Today is an extra special episode. I got my buddy Taylor Wood here. Taylor and I actually went to the same college our freshman year. And not only that, we were in the same dorm hall our freshman year. And he got the real estate bug like 4 years ago. And I remember thinking like, man, I'm the only guy in my circle that I know personally that like that does real estate. And then I started seeing Taylor's flips and I was like, yes, somebody's doing it. And now he's bigger and better than we are. And we'll dive into that on the show. But Taylor started in real estate 4 years ago after a successful career, a career in the investment industry with Edward Jones. He started Crosswater Construction and he is on his way. I'm sure he probably is already a millionaire, but on his way to being a multimillionaire. He's got 350 plus self-storage units, some multifamily stuff, and does a killer job on fix and flips. So Taylor, thanks so much for being with us today, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here, guys.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you. So I like to start off with like the why behind everything, right? So you had a good life, you got a good job, you went to school and you got the job you're planning on getting, right? And then something happened. Something made the shift, made you want to jump over to real estate. Explain that for our listeners. What did that look like for you?
I wanted something that was mine. I went to work for Edward Jones, like you said, and it's really at the end of the day, it's a W-2 income. Yeah. You have quotas you got to meet. You are up to answer to your customers. And I wanted something that was for me and my family that I could leave behind generational wealth and have freedom of time. I like being with my family and my dog and I like doing adventurous things. I don't want to be at a desk all day. So had to make the change.
Yeah, for sure. What did that look like? Cause that's hard, right? Like Edward Jones, not only did you like, you were working there, but then you like took over a branch and had, I'm assuming, a very, very comfortable salary. How did you justify that in either just to yourself or to your friends and family? Like how did you explain that? And like, what made you feel like I'm going to be successful when I do make that jump?
Oh, it's just believing in yourself. It was hard cause I was managing a little over $30 million at the time, yeah. Friends and family's money. And was doing a good job of it and had to tell them, hey guys, I'm leaving. And, a lot of people don't just say, oh, you're going to crush it. A lot of people are skeptical. So you have to be, your own advocate. You got to talk, you know, well of yourself and just know that what you're doing, what's best for you. And, don't listen to the haters, as I've heard a lot of rap songs.
Yeah, I love it.
I think that's an important part that you just said. You have to be an advocate of yourself.
Yeah.
The belief in yourself is so important because, like, you know, Jeff brought up a great point. I think all of us probably experienced it at some point where everybody's like, that's pretty unsafe of what you're doing. Like, is it you that you were telling me a couple months ago, your mom's always like, well, what about the taxes?
The what about the taxes question. I was talking to this guy in our office about this the other day, and I was like, that is when you know that our society has been set up for you to fail. When you're complaining about like not getting that $3,000 tax credit back, like that was your money that they took and borrowed and used to make money. Like that's why you get money back, is they're returning your loan that they forced you to give them.
Yeah.
So, you made 800 grand this year. What about the taxes? Great. It's still better than just making 60 and then getting three back at the end of the year.
Yeah. It's just,
exactly. I'm writing a six-figure check to the government, that means I had another six figures on my end as well. Yeah, I'm not complaining.
Easily. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
So tell us about what exactly that transition looked like. Did you start doing real estate before you left your corporate job completely? And how did you balance that? I mean, we have a very similar story in the fact that I left the corporate world too. And the in-between for me was very difficult.
I did not balance it well at first. So I started it with Edward Jones and my business partner and I are time where business partners were just best friends. And I saw a duplex come on Redfin and I said, hey, what if we bought a duplex? I'd been listening to Bigger Pockets a little bit, knew a little bit about it. And he goes, yeah, let's do it. So we pulled together all of our money and we were 22, 23 at the time. Not a lot of money to be had. Bought the duplex and we sold it 2 months later. And my chunk of the money that I made was about 48 grand.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's about what I would have made, you know, 6 months of working my first corporate job. So I made that in 2 months and it only took me 4 days of work, just lots of transaction time. So I realized I'm doing something wrong. And all my wealthiest clients at Edward Jones were real estate investors.
Yep.
So I'm seeing the writing on the wall, and finally just took the leap. Did it all in one day, told everybody in one day. And then I gave myself 2 months to exit out. I gave my book of business to my brother, who is a financial advisor as well, sorry, brother-in-law, and never looked back, burned the ships.
I love it, man. That's awesome. That's not easy to do.
No, it's not.
I think what's key there is like you made the decision and one day you notified everybody. Like you didn't allow that potential doubt or that little bit of, I don't know about this to creep up, right? Like you made the decision, you cut it off and you made the jump to that. I think that's so key. That's awesome. So you do first duplex, you start passing everything off. How did you start to scale, or when did you make the jump to like deciding, hey, we're going to hold stuff for ourselves for long-term wealth? Like walk us through what that looked like for you guys.
Yeah. So first we just started flipping. So we did the duplex. We did another house after that. We did maybe two or three more. So I probably had four deals under my belt before I even left Edward Jones.
Nice.
And then we realized, you know, everybody kept saying we'd go to title to sign. They'd say, why are you selling your properties? You know, you make money holding them. And my response is always, well, you have to have money to buy properties. So I have to sell one of these to keep growing.
Yeah.
So the transition looked like we started flipping and realized, sure, it's great to make a lot of money, but when I sell these, I'm giving a lot of money in taxes. Sure, I'm keeping a lot, but I have nothing to show for it in 5 years other than the money I made.
Yeah.
So then we started to transition into what's going to be a long-term asset play. And that was mini storage, multifamily, getting our flipping business off the ground so that I don't have to be there as much.
Yeah.
And a few other facets of real estate, because there's so many legs of real estate. And we're trying to, you know, narrow that in, but we're kind of touching all of it right now.
I love it. Before we jump into the self-storage and the multifamily, I want to hit on something you said. So you and your partner, before you were partners, you were best friends. Mm-hmm. My mentor would slap me in the face if we didn't talk about that. How did you guys navigate that, right? Because traditional like advice would be you don't work with friends and family. But I mean, Noah and I started as friends first. We weren't best friends. We had met each other. We were friends for like a month or two. But that's how we started and then jumped into it. And we always hear like, oh, are you sure that was the best decision? And we explain it. And it's like, okay, yeah, it makes sense. So how did you guys navigate that? And then like, what is the, explain to our listeners, like, what's the benefit of having a partner and what role do you kind of see and what role does he oversee in the company?
Right. So we would have got the same advice then. Everybody we told said, you guys are a bunch of idiots. Yeah. That's never going to work out. Yeah. A business and friends and friendship never works. We'd been friends since we were 10. We think we're a little bit different than other friends. Everybody says that. But before we could even drive, we'd have our parents drop us off at Goodwill. We'd go to Goodwill. We'd find items, check their value online and go sell them. So we've been flipping stuff since we were like 10 years old. And we've always done well together. So we just made it sure that we had very specific roles and everything's in writing. So I have my roles. My business partner, Kyle, has his roles. We don't overlap unless one of us asks the other to look at it. We could almost not even talk and our business would keep going because our roles are so independent of each other. Or we're not going to be butting heads because we both think we're alpha males. Our wives would agree. They think that we've, you know, any sport we play, we bicker. But business is something that we just keep both of our roles separate.
Yeah.
And we make sure that we're both going to the same goal, but we're getting there and we're each doing our part to get there.
Yeah, I love it.
What would you say are some of the differences between you and your partner in terms of like skill set or like just natural ability in business?
My business partner can turn a penny into a dollar and any day of the week. He is a smart dude and he can talk to people really well. So he was a realtor before we started working together and he had flipped a couple of houses as well. But he became Thurston County, the county that I live in, top realtor his first year of real estate when he was 22.
Way. Wow.
Yeah. You know, he made, I think without even trying, something like probably $500,000 just in real estate sales. So this guy, not only is he good at talking to people, he's just very concise. He's a man of few words. He doesn't waste time. And he's just can make anybody feel comfortable, which I think is important. And he's really good at putting deals together. He sees value in things that people don't see.
Nice.
So that's where his value really lies.
Nice. And then what about, and then you, do you see oversee more like the operations role? Is that kind of where you're at or?
Yeah, day-to-day operations, managing our flips. And then we both tackle the self-storage portion together. he's more of like the deal maker, putting the actual deal together.
Yeah.
I see my value in understanding the self-storage business, understanding the expansion of it, the ins and outs, the nuances. My wife's an attorney, so she goes ahead and she reads all of our fine print, all the legal documents for all of our real estate. I try to keep some of that in. So day-to-day operations and the actual business side of things behind the scenes.
Okay.
So would you say like your strength is, if you've read Traction, would you say your strength is like the integrator and he is like visionary, like he can envision how to put these deals together and creatively make stuff work?
Yeah, I think we both have a little bit of each of those. Mm-hmm. I would say that Kyle's definitely a visionary. I mean, I don't know if we can dive quickly into one of the projects, the good example.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah, this is not related to mini storage at all, but there was there's a mini storage facility we were looking at, and we're on Google Maps, and behind it, there's a piece of property. I think nothing of it. My business partner says, hey, that's a pretty good piece of property. I think the zoning there is high density. I said, sure, never thought anything about it. And he calls me a week later, says, hey, I actually got a hold of the owner. I found him on an old newspaper ad online and called him, and he's going to sell us the land for $75,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, $75,000 is a lot of money, but Kyle's the visionary, so I trust him. So we look at it. That's about a year ago. Fast forward to today, we're under contract to sell it for $2.35 million. We are at land use. We close in October, and we're into it. Total land, $75,000 plus $35,000 of fees with our architect, civil, geotech, everything. He's a visionary. He sees stuff that I don't see.
Yeah, that's got to be like one of the highest profit margins in like real estate history. So you guys just took it to like preliminary plat, got like land approval for like an apartment building or something.
Yeah, so that's again where Kyle's visionary aspect comes in as well. And then we both played into this, but taking the land as it sits right now, it made no sense. All the neighboring properties had stormwater running down into the middle of it. Kyle said, well, that's not really making a lot of sense. Half our property is stormwater. What's the cost to go underground? $800,000. Okay. But it adds an extra, I think it was an extra 70 units. Wow. And we can sell the land at $21,000 a door just for the land.
Yeah.
And we're not actually putting in the underground system. We're just putting it on a piece of paper saying you could do this. Could do and it adds X amount of value. So that changing the zoning, getting a, we're called it the missing middle project. Olympia, Washington has issues with affordable housing. So we catered to the city. We said, hey, we want to bring in smaller sized units so that it technically is affordable housing because your rent per square foot is lower. They love the project. We got it approved by everybody. So yeah, we went from land as it sits to we have full renderings of everything, land use approval, everything's set and good. We just have one more Camille hearing with the community before we get checked off on.
Gotcha. That's rad, man. That's a killer project. Man. And you've been in that 18 months? Is that what she said?
We bought it about a year ago.
Okay.
Maybe less. Yeah.
You just buy the land, the $75,000 lot cash?
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
Bought that in.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask what the other piece was. It sounded like you pieced two pieces of land together. Is that correct?
So we were looking at a mini storage facility, and behind it, there was a piece of land because we're still going to buy the mini storage facility, but the piece of land is separate. So we bought that for $75,000, and then we had to pay our all of our costs to get it to land use. But other than that, we're under $120,000 in cost total.
That's incredible.
That's absolutely insane. I'm like, $75,000 is to 2. What? How
2.35?
Much?
It's under a contract for 2.35. Yeah.
That's incredible. Man. Great job on that, bro.
It's that's what I'm saying. The business partner, he's a visionary. He sees things other people don't see, and you don't realize. I mean, some people will work their entire life to get to retirement of $1 million. But if you just look outside the box with real estate, you could do it in 12 months.
Yeah,
it's a pretty fun thing to see.
Yeah, that's the power of real estate. Like that one deal is literally like, not to throw my mom under the bus, but that's more than my mom will make in her entire life. Like, and there's people that live that way. Like there are so many people that live like, oh, well, this is safe. And I'm not going to think outside the box. So I'm not willing to make the jump or whatever. And it's like, yeah, sure. There's no lie about it. Like when you jump into real estate, like your floor, the floor doesn't exist. You could fall and you could lose a ton of stuff. But also, in the adverse side of it is the ceiling doesn't exist.
Nope.
There is no top to
exactly.
it. There's no lid. You're just going to keep pushing and pushing as much as you want to go. And you can create a lifetime worth of money in one single deal. And disclaimer to the listeners, it doesn't always go that way. Yeah, so just a quick disclaimer.
You probably a 1%.
You can
of a
lose
1%.
A lifetime worth of money in one deal.
In
you
one
lose
deal
it
too.
Just as fast.
Yeah. Yep. Do you guys track like your average profit per project outside of like your large development ones, like on your flips, your like average profit?
Yeah, we track all of our, being in the finance world prior to this, I track everything down to the penny. I mean, any drop of gas that we buy for the weed dealer, I track that for every flip. Everything's itemized. So I track it all down to the penny.
What is your guys's, what's your guys's KPI on average profit? Like, what do you guys make per flip on average?
So after everything, you know, people look, I've actually never seen an HGTV show with like Chip and Joe. I'd love to, I know who they are. But everybody watches it and, you know, oh, hey, we bought the house for 100. Yeah. We sold it for 200. We made 100.
Yeah,
No, you didn't. So I guess so when we look at a flip deal, we, and it sounds arrogant in a way to say it, but this is just our metric. If the profit margin, and we work our numbers backwards, but if we come to $100,000, we'll do the project. If it's $99,000, we will not do the project.
Oh.
Because we assume that it might take us a month to finish a project. We'd like to make minimum of $25,000 each that month. So we set our margins at $100,000. So everything can tank. We land at $50,000. You know, our margins get cut in half.
Yeah.
We're still happy.
Okay.
Fortunately, we've always been over that though.
Nice. And so when you're saying margin, you're not talking total spread though, like HGTV, right? Like you're talking like $100,000 net profit after realtor fees, financial costs, and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yep. After our excise tax, title, everything, any capital improvements. The money that goes in our bank.
Oh yeah, because Washington does have the excise tax. Is it 1.6%?
I wish it was. They actually raised it a year and a half ago, so it's a scaled program now. So it's based on the value of the property. So it starts at 1.24%. Once you get over 3 million, it actually goes to, it's either 3 or 3.5%. So the property that we just bought, the mini storage facility, the owner we bought it from, she had to pay $110,000 in excise tax just to sell the property.
Wow, that's crazy.
In addition to the taxes that she pays every single year to own
it. Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So to answer your question, that's our average is about 100.
Okay.
We generally better than that, but that's our standard.
And what kind of like deal size are you guys purchasing? So like what's your, and obviously like, I'm sure there's different areas of Olympia and Thurston County that you're paying less and more, but kind of average it out. Like are you getting into a house for 300 or are you getting in for 700? Cause that'll help the listeners to understand like that big, cause 100K, I will say like we've been fortunate, our market's blown up. So our average profit last year was like $87,000 a flip, which was great. We're stoked on that. That hasn't always been normal for where we're at because our barrier to entry, I think, is much less than Olympia. We may be catching up. So when we talk about profit per deal on this flip for the or on the show for the listeners, just understand that that's different per market per deal, right? Like if you're going to do a flip in Hawaii, like you better make a ton of money because your entry point is probably 700 grand.
Yeah. If you're not making 100 grand, your ROI could be less than 10%.
Yeah. So, whereas if you're in Columbus, Ohio, you can make 30 grand. That's totally fine because you're buying the asset for 40, flipping it for 10, 15. Yep. So you just watch that return on investment and those percentages. So, but what does it look like over in Olympia for you guys?
If you asked me a year ago, I'd say we were getting into them under 200.
Wow.
Today we're probably getting into them. It depends really. The last one we just bought was 427,000.
Yeah.
So I'd say the average probably falls somewhere near about 300, 200 to 300. The market's absolutely shifted though. A track home in Olympia a year ago was maybe 300,000. Now they're 450,000, 500,000. So honestly, what I tell you today could be wrong tomorrow,
Yeah, we're the same way. We saw our two counties here, Ada County and Canyon County, and Ada County saw 42% appreciation from quarter one of last year to quarter two, quarter one of this year. And then Canyon County saw 58% appreciation in a 12-year cycle or 12-month cycle. Sorry. That's unheard of, right? It's freaking crazy. So it's a really hot market right now, but also, listeners, quick disclaimer, be careful of investing in hot markets. It's not always that hot.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to bank on appreciation.
Yep.
Yeah. And our CPI index, you know, for the quarterly CPI index last month, our value of our dollar went down by 1%. And I think it has something to do with that. So you're totally right saying, be careful getting into hot markets, know your market. And in my market, there's a street we call Harrison Avenue. On the left-hand side of it, a nicely done house, 3-bed, 2-bath is probably worth 450, 475. on the right hand side of it, it's worth 575, 600.
Really?
So it's knowing your market, not jumping in just, oh, you know, Olympia is great. Well, you have to know every street, every intersection. You have to know where the good people are, the bad people, the good houses, the bad houses. So knowing your market, if you're getting in an expensive market, do your research.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Taylor, what does your marketing look like? So, I mean, obviously you're finding great deals. What are you doing to find those deals?
So my business partner is also a realtor. So we get a lot of, houses that wouldn't necessarily be financeable. So they're probably not going to hit the market. So they just call us and say, hey, so-and-so needs to sell this. My wife being an attorney, I know quite a few attorneys here in town, and so several of them deal with, family law and, probate. So if a house is, you know, there's four siblings and they're fighting over a house, they need their money, the attorney will call us and say, hey, I have this house that just came in.
Yeah.
We need to sell it. We don't have time to list it. The siblings won't sign off on it. We just come buy it. We've done mailers. We have a full-time employee that does cold calling.
Nice.
He cold calls on all of our different assets in real estate, but mainly flips. And then people, they kind of just start reaching out to us because they've heard what we've done, and wholesalers. So lots of avenues. Our biggest one, wholesalers and people reaching out to us.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you guys experience a dry up of wholesalers at all? Like during, like their middle or start of COVID?
Yeah, I thought they stopped existing.
Yeah.
And then when they came back, they thought they were God himself.
Yeah.
So they got really fond of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that's not just our market.
I think they might have gone extinct in Idaho.
Yeah, well, but they've been coming back. I just noticed, like, I've been getting deals sent to me in like the last 3 weeks, and it's like, if you're not going to offer me more than I'm asking for, don't bother replying. I'm like, then why are you even asking for this amount? Like, ask for more then.
Right.
And like, sorry, you're not that, like,
the deal's not that great.
You have a great business, but like, also, like, if you were smart during COVID, because so I was a dumb flipper pre-COVID. I only got intelligent during COVID. Like, everything shut down, and I just realized, like, no, the market is still trending up. Everybody got scared. Everybody's taking a pause. Wholesalers don't exist, so I need to start marketing for my own deal and become the wholesaler to myself. Like, I got to get those deep discounted properties that I used to, like, I just used to be lazy. Like, oh, I'll check my email once a week, and if a deal comes along, cool, I'll flip it. Now we, like, we spend, like, $14,000 a month on marketing, and we get, like, 10 to 12 deals a month from it. So, like, the math is there. It all makes sense, but, like, COVID is what launched our business into that next area where, like, now it forced us to market, and so now we're not just dependent on these wholesalers anymore, but it's good to hear that it wasn't just our market that they dried up and they came back like, oh, we're the bee's knees. Oh, sorry, bro.
Right. They came back and everybody wanted to be a flipper. Everybody was quitting their jobs in COVID and everybody wanted to start flipping houses. So I think it's really good that you guys started implementing your own marketing strategy. You have to do that or else you're going to be fighting with one deal and 10 people are looking at it. But now it's just you, the buyer, and the letter you sent. It's so smart. Good for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got aggressive. Well, hey, I'd love to actually dive in deeper into this self-storage deal that you've got.
Yeah.
Because I think, I'm going to give you guys just a little teaser before he starts the story. Taylor's 27 years old.
Yep.
He's got 350 units with the ability to add more. Is that correct, Taylor?
Yep, about 100, 120 more.
With the ability to add 120 more units at 27 years old. What back-end value on this after you add the 100 units? What do you think this is worth?
So we, you know, kind of where it's sitting now without the 120 units, prime locations, they're a large corporation here in town. They do all commercial real estate. They gave us a valuation of about 6.5. And then once we add those units, we're going to be closer to about 8, maybe 8.5.
Wow.
It just depends on making sure that we can actually rent all of those out. So we're going to build that out probably in phases. But right now we have, we only have 6 units available out of the entire property, and they're 4x8s. They rent for $60 a month. So all of our big properties are, all the big units are rented up. So if we sold today, I'd probably want to be asking 6.5, 7 for today.
Walk us through what you acquired it for and then explain why you saw value in it. So, right, like my understanding of multifamily and self-storage is there's two ways. I'm sure there's more than two, but the two that I kind of focus on when I'm looking at a deal is the value add potential of this is a mismanaged asset that I can simply go in and start managing properly. And by doing that, I can raise the rents to market rent and I can literally create money out of thin air just by getting it to market rent. Or two, this is a dilapidated asset and I got to go in and I got to renovate some units and I got to get it up to par. And then that's what creates the margin for my deal. So walk us through what you bought it for and then what made you attracted to it. What was the value add that you saw?
Yep. So I'll start at kind of how we found it, what attracted us to it. So my business partner actually found this one. His role is more about the acquisition portion of this. And so he found it. And the way that we kind of know it's a good deal, we have a metric list that we go through. But one of the first things we do is we Google the name of the facility. Mm. If they don't have a website, if you can't find a phone number, an email, they're probably not automated. Yeah. They probably don't do credit card processing. They're probably still taking checks. They're probably running it like mom and pop would. And then when you drive by the facility, if there's not one sign out there, you just, you have no idea what it is. So I see that as just, you know, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I'm so excited. And they have, it's great for them because they built it 20, 30 years ago. They're making tons of money. Why fix it up? Why do anything? But I see a lot of value to be added. I mean, they are offering 27 different types of discounts
People,
military, you know, male military, female military, 60 and older, 70 and older, 80 and older. It made no sense. So I saw this as a poorly managed facility. So, we went in and we kind of just had to figure out what she wanted for it. And she didn't know. Her husband built it. She just was really collecting the money at this point, living down in Arizona. She had no idea what she wanted. So we gave her an honest evaluation of what we think it's worth today. She met with her attorney and we settled on the number is 4 million is the number we settled on.
Okay.
So we offered her that night. We offered it and it's an off market deal. We cold called her.
Wow.
Somebody finds out about it and they make her an offer the night that she's supposed to accept our offer. So I don't think I slept that night at all.
Yeah.
Wake up in the morning, she calls us, we got it. So do our inspection and we got he said, hey, there's some roofs need to be replaced. There's some other deferred maintenance. So she gave us $110,000 in seller credits for maintenance, which was unheard of in this market.
Yeah.
So our actual purchase price after all of that was $382,742. Looking at the wrong number there. So hair under 4 million.
Yeah.
Nice. What do you think you did to get your offer accepted over the other person? Because the other person, if they were smart, they would have just said, well, what did the other guy offer you? And most sellers will just tell you, which means all they needed to do was come in and be like, okay, well, my offer is then 4.1 million.
Yeah,
exactly. I think it's mini storage is an interesting thing. I don't remember the exact statistic on this, but facilities that are under 100,000 square feet, 94% of those are not owned by REITs. They're owned by individuals.
Yeah.
So large size facilities owned by individuals and built by them. So knowing that, we knew that her husband had built it. She had ran it. The other people that are making an offer were actually a REIT. So a smaller REIT based out of Portland. And we just said, hey, you know, you built this with your husband. This has been a pride of ownership thing. You're local. I'm local. I can't beat a REIT. I really can't. What I can do is promise I'm going to keep this local business. And if that means anything to you, I hope we can make this work. And to her, that meant the world. So she said yes.
Wow, that's
intelligent.
Awesome.
So you appealed to something that was a little bit more emotional than just money. For her.
Yeah.
And I think that the key part there is you paid attention to the details of the deal.
Yep.
You said your husband built this. He's from here. You're from here. I'm from here. We're going to keep this here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of a legacy that goes into it. I hope you guys are listening to that and you're paying attention to when you're in negotiations for these deals, whether it be a single family home or a $4 million self-storage facility. Pay attention to the details and see how you can apply to the needs of that seller.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just know that price, especially on those larger deals on commercial products, like price isn't the end all be all. Like, price is important. People want to net money, but there's also things like, hey, is this seller in a tough spot and their business is actually in here and they're going to use the money from the sell to then get their new location or scale the business down and move somewhere else. Well then, hey, maybe price is important, but maybe more important is that you're going to do a rent back to them for 6 months and allow them to stay in this building and continue to run their business. Mm-hmm. Or with us on a smaller scale, like we talk to sellers and we notice that they're really motivated to sell, but they're terrified to move. They've been in a home for 50 years. They have 50 years worth of stuff. Price is not the most important thing at that point. Convenience is. So we offer, we were literally negotiating one the other day and the lady's like, I'm not selling it for less than $350. And we probably could have came up to $350. It would have been decent. But rather than just jumping up and minimizing our profit by $13,000, we said, well, what if we get you a moving pod and a moving team to load up your stuff and then allow you to rent back the house for 30 days? And she was like, oh, you could do that? Yeah, well, I'll sign today. And so that costs us like $3,000 compared to coming up in 13,000. Like, so price isn't the end all be all to these types of things. Like, one, motivation, you got to determine that motivation, whether it's single family, self storage, whatever it is that you're, whatever you are buying, somebody is selling for a reason. Find that reason and then give them a benefit based on that reason, not just on the price.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really smart. All right. So you bought it for just under four and today it's valued at 6.5. Was that correct?
Yeah, about that.
Okay. What have you guys done since you acquired it to increase that valuation now?
So we have a pride of ownership because we're, my business partner is 28, I'm 27.
Yeah.
And it's a big responsibility. You know, we do have a bank loan on it and we're relying on the bank. So we want to make sure that we treat this property as best we can. So what we've done so far is we put one of our employees down there as a full-time manager. Nice. Told him he can have his rent for free. His salary stays the same and you're going to grow with us. Wow. And so he not only works down there, but he is also incentivized to keep finding us new facilities because he gets a bonus every time we find a new facility.
That's smart.
We've gone through and just cleaned up the facility. Really didn't need much, but it just needed to be clean. So we went through and we trying to utilize the space better, make it not look just as dingy. Leaf blowing goes a long way at these places because really what we have is a lot of concrete and some metal buildings.
Yeah.
So there's not much you can do in terms of making it cuter.
Yeah.
We decluttered the office. We made everything simple. We went to from the old system that they were using to the new system Storage, which in my opinion is the best self-storage program. Mm. When we were down there, every time we're down there, I probably see 6, 7, 8 people come in to pay with a check or with cash. That's a poor use of time. My manager could be sitting there calling other facilities instead of, you know, talking to Joe Smo, who's been there for 35 years and just wants to tell his experience in the town. So automating everything, going to credit card processing, which is an expense. I mean, it's 2.5% of our total, you know, revenue is going to go to credit card expenses. But how much more do we make in terms of not having to pay our employee, you know, to be there for overtime because you couldn't get everything done for the day. So updating our systems, making the facility just look better. And then the old manager was actually using 10 of the biggest units for herself, the old owner. So we rented those out and we got them all filled up the first week and they ran out for $285 a month. So it added almost $3,000 a month of income, away.
Yeah. So that's what's cool
raised
about
rents by about 25%.
Oh really? That's wow. So she was drastically mismanaging this asset.
I mean, she was her cost. Yes. Like the cost of that one employee was double what it should have been because of how much she was using from the
facility. Yeah, easily. Yeah, man, let's hammer down on that. So commercial real estate is so fascinating and self-storage particularly because you sell the valuation of a property when it's commercial is a cap rate rather than like a single family. A single family is determined on what other single families have sold for and what the kind of demand for that product at the time is, right? Whereas self-storage is looked at more of a business. It's looked at what in large multifamily as well. How much revenue comes in from this? What are the expenses? And then based on that total, that number, we call it the NOI, that then the cap rate for that area, which cap rates can get a little weird depending on what area you're in. But the point of this is that if you raise your revenue, you directly raise your valuation of that property. And what's cool about self-storage, say I buy a 8-unit apartment building. I only have 8 doors that I have the ability to raise revenue to then hopefully get a higher valuation. I cannot raise revenue enough to get an extremely large valuation increase. Self-storage, you can go in and you can do things like there was 500 units and we raised the rent by $15 a unit, right? Because when you say 25%, I'm assuming that probably only equates to what, $15 to $18 or something, maybe 20?
It's not a lot, And people you'd think they would say, oh, you know, I'm going to go down the street and go somewhere else. No, they're not.
The cost of moving, the hassle.
The cost of moving, the time, and really they've been paying under market for the last 10 years or however long. It's time they catch up to current markets and they're going to be shell-shocked if they go shop elsewhere. So really for them, they can just go on. We keep the competitors' rates at our place so they can just see, hey, we're right in line. You can go down there, be my guest, do it out of spite. I don't care.
Yeah.
You're going to pay more. You might as well just stay here.
Yeah. And so by having those small increases that if you say, hey, I raised the rent $15 and you don't understand multifamily or self-storage and cap rates and how that works, you're like, oh, good for you. $15, $1,500 times 350 units divided over a cap rate. Like that's how you start making money and big amounts of money very quickly. So that's one of the things we're looking at is getting into commercial real estate just because listeners, if you're listening, yeah, single family is great, but it's all based on market conditions at the time. Commercial real estate has a value past just past just what people think the value is, right? It's actual like metrics. There's a science to it. You get this revenue, you have these expenses, the valuation is this. And any little bit of increase over multiple doors adds an exponential value on the back end. So I think, man, that is so smart. What a great move to make, jump into that self-storage. So I noticed you were saying that you moved your guy down there. You're in Olympia. Right. Where's the self-storage at?
Self-storage in Chehalis, Washington, right on the border of Centralia.
Okay.
It's about a 20-25 minute drive for him. He was a guy that was working at Lowe's, and I poached him from there. I thought he was super personable, and he wanted to be a realtor. Why do you want to be a realtor? He goes, oh, they make so much money. I go, well, if money's your goal, you don't want to be a realtor.
Yeah.
You can make some money. You're not going to make a lot. So he said, well, teach me. I said, okay, fine. It's not going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of work. And he's doing everything down there. He's a sharp kid. And he just works hard.
Man, I love that. That I haven't heard somebody say I poached an employee from Lowe's and now he's managing my asset that's bringing in millions of dollars.
We're going to Home Depot today.
I know
I go over there. Yeah.
Now you got to go to Lowe's.
Lowe's
has a higher tier of employees. Just kidding, Home Depot people.
They got a little higher.
Oh man. So that is awesome. So in the meantime, we had talked about you're also building a little bit of a rental portfolio and starting to hold stuff for yourself. Why did you start holding things for yourself? Explain the upside there to our listeners. And then what's your overall vision? Like, where do you see this all going? Are you going to keep buying self-storage, large multifamily? Like, what's the grand plan?
Yeah, so the grand plan's ever evolving. I'm glad you called it a plan because people would say, what are your goals? Well, I don't have goals. I have a game plan.
Yeah.
I know exactly where I'm going to land. I know that I have the Super Bowl coming up. How do I get to the Super Bowl? Right.
Yeah.
I got to play in each game. And then I got to go to, I don't know. I haven't played football in a while. I forget how it goes, but you got to play each game to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I don't just have a goal of, you know, I'd like to get there. I have a plan to get there.
Yeah. That's
so, and we look backwards. So I look at what is my plan? My plan is I want financial freedom and I want freedom of time. Mm-hmm. I care more about freedom of time.
Yep.
Because financial freedom, I don't know what that metric is. I don't know what number you got to hit to be happy, but I do know that if I can spend 80% of my day with my family, my wife, my dog, just doing things I like, I'm a happy guy.
Yeah.
So it's not about the money as much, but you have to have a little bit of money to get there. So what made us start holding properties is exactly that. You can sell them and you have a lump sum of cash.
Yeah.
But I don't know the future of fiat currency. I don't know if we're going to become an entire world of crypto.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to be selling tulip bulbs to Dutch Holland people because nothing makes sense right now in the world.
I'm with you.
If you haven't followed the tulip craze from Holland, you should go research it. It's super interesting.
Really?
But don't got time for that, but it's an interesting story. So really, what's something that's going to hold its value? It'd be a hedge against inflation. And if I ever need to sell it, it'll be able to be sold in whatever the currency of that time is, whether it's fiat, crypto, or something else. And that's real estate. What can Amazon, Microsoft, Google, YouTube, what can they not take over? Maybe they could. I mean, BlackRock's trying. There's a few other companies trying, but they're not going to take over real estate. Yep. They're not going to buy every house, not going to buy every apartment, not going to buy every mini storage in the world. So that's what maybe you want to start holding. What's going to be something that I can own and pass down to my kids with a fairly low tax rate to my kids or none at all with the stepped up cost basis.
Yeah.
So what's going to make me happy and my wife happy, our kids happy. And I want, you know, seven generations down the road to say, yeah, some old fart named Grandpa Taylor, great, 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 great Grandpa Taylor. He paid for our college.
Yeah.
That's what drives me.
That's awesome.
Yep. Dude, that's, I would say that's nearly 100% in alignment with why I got started in real estate.
Yep.
It's the same thing. Like I just wanted, and it's so funny you talk about your dogs, like, I don't know if we follow each other yet, but we will after this.
We will.
You'll see a post that goes live on my Instagram today. That is me running with my dogs, and below it, it literally says, "I work hard so that way I can give my dogs the backyard of their dreams."
Yeah.
Like, you know. So it's that's pretty cool of you to think so long term, though. You know, even think about your grandchildren. Like, yeah, I want to pay for their college. I want to set my lineage up for a different lifestyle and more doors to be opened than you ever had. And then how cool is that? Like, imagine if like you could have had your mind turned on to real estate at 15 years old because you went around with your grandpa and collected rents. Or he told you, you need to, you're going to go put coin operated washing machines in the basement of my tenplex.
Yeah.
And you're going to go collect that every single month. And all of a sudden the grandkid's like, whoa, $100, I can go buy all these toys. And you're like, yeah. Now imagine you could do that 50 times over without having to work.
Yep.
You just change, you can change people's lives with just that knowledge. So.
Yep. And if I cannot just change their generational wealth, but change their generational mindset, you're so right. Yep. That'd be absolutely huge to me.
Yeah.
My wife and I, we don't have any kids yet. We just have our little Australian Shepherd who I imagine that's what having a kid is like. People tell me I'm wrong, but I imagine it's similar. And
says the guy with no kids. I got the two kids. I actually watched.
No kids.
If you guys are listening to this, find this video by Trey Kennedy. The dude's a freaking hilarious comedian. He does this. He did this video. He just posted on his Instagram like 2 days ago, and it's like he's pretending to be a woman in a relationship, and it's like him is pre-kid mom, and then him is like post-kid mom. And one of the things he does is he's like, oh my gosh, yeah, like, so having a dog is totally like having a kid. And then he transfers to like the kid mom, and he's like, no, it's not. No one told you that you were raising literal demons. These are demons, they're not dogs. And there was just so many things that I was cracking up. But anyways, that's a tangent.
Oh, that's too good.
It's a funny video.
No, that's too good. I forgot what we were even talking about before that.
Yeah, we're talking. Yeah, something about dogs.
Like financial freedom or time freedom.
Yeah.
To spend it with the people and the pets and how you want to spend it. Like for me, like I'm very intentional. Like I spend at least an hour outside a day with my dogs.
Yeah.
And that's my freedom. Like when I worked at corporate America, sometimes I didn't get home till 7 p.m. The sunlight's already gone. I'd be lucky if I could squeeze in a 15-minute walk with Milo.
Yeah.
But now, like, that's my choice. Like, I get to make that choice to go out there and be out there for an hour. So.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I lost you guys there for a second. I apologize.
No, you're all good. We got you back just in time. Taylor, what are you a book reader or a podcast guy or both?
Both. I like both. I listen to podcasts all day.
Awesome.
If I'm at a job site, I put my headphones in and I just listen to podcasts.
I love it. What would you recommend listeners wanting to get started in real estate read or listen to?
If you want to get started in real estate and you're just a beginner, Bigger Pockets. That's how I really got started. That's how everybody got started. Their joke on there is the thing that always got people started in real estate was Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yep.
Well, I think now the new joke is what got you started in real estate is Bigger Pockets. So everybody should start there with Bigger Pockets. AJ Osborne, we were talking about him earlier a little bit. He is a fantastic self-storage investor, and he has a podcast. It's called Self-Storage Investing for, I forget what it's called. I listen to it all the time. I just like learning. This one has nothing to do with business, but I think being multifaceted is pretty important, especially when you're talking to investors who have different interests. I know that my investors have different interests than I do. So if I can know things, kind of a little bit about everything. So Joe Rogan, cause he is the male Oprah, and I love that guy. So
I love it.
Not business related, but that's just my fun podcast.
I love it, man.
I think the AJ Osborne show is called Self-Storage Income with AJ Osborne.
Yeah.
Just for anyone listening, so that way they can find it.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, Taylor, thanks so much, man. How can our listeners get a hold of you if they want to chat with you, have questions, anything like that?
Yep. So I don't check social media hardly at all. If you send me a message on there, I'll probably respond in 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
realistically. So if you want to get a hold of me, text me. I'm happy to get my phone number out. If anybody has any questions on self-storage, flipping, we didn't get into it, but I also own multifamily. We just made an offer on 282 units 2 days ago here in Olympia.
Man, that's rad.
And we should know in a couple of days if that gets accepted. So we're also doing a little bit of that. If people can just text me, my number is 360-878-7615. Shoot me a text. Give me your name, where you're from. I'd love to chat.
Awesome, man. Taylor, appreciate it so much, man. Thanks for coming on the show today.
The 661 number that just texted you is me.
Oh, perfect. There we go.
Perfect.
Let's make sure I got that.
He probably didn't actually send it. He's just being stupid. All right, man. Well, hey, thanks so much.
I didn't even see you texting.
No, he's secretive. He's like back in school where you got it under the desk. You're like, what's going on?
Dude, thank you so much for coming on, man. Like, you're a very, very impressive, you're a very, very impressive real estate investor. Really cool to have you come on. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are very inspired by this episode. Absolutely. I'm inspired by this episode.
Yeah.
I'm all juiced up and jacked up for commercial real estate now after talking to you.
Yeah.
And glad to have the relationship now too.
Yeah. And incredibly humble. Yeah, I want to hammer down on that before we leave. Taylor is, guys, this guy makes stupid amounts of money and he is humble. He's here on our show. He's talking with us. And he just gave you his personal cell phone number. Like, that doesn't exist. So no. That speaks highly of his humility, his character, and who he is. So, man, thanks so much. We appreciate you.
Yeah. No, thank you guys. Love what you guys are doing. I'm excited to see this podcast blow up. Joe Rogan's number one in the world right now. Soon it's going to be Chasing Freedom. I've listened to it. I've listened to every real estate podcast. And my running joke is I finished the podcast app. Like, I've listened to everything.
Yeah.
And you guys have a great podcast. I love what you guys are doing. I'm sharing it to your listeners. Share it with your friends. Because if somebody can learn something here and change their life, if it takes this to change their life or someone else's podcast, share it with your friends. Get these guys to blow up. Get them trending. And you guys are doing a great job.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Appreciate
that really
it.
Means a lot. We really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Cool, absolutely. Guys. Thanks absolutely, for tuning guys. In. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.